Here we are again.
Yes. Number 23.
Yep.
You know, we're going to talk about another boring technical episode today.
Very boring.
I'm kind of bummed.
Are you?
Yeah, I really am. I'll explain. Let's get the intro going.
Let's do it.
Yes.
We're back.
Another episode. Number 23. So the reason why I'm a little bummed is because I feel like our podcast is getting boring, man. It needs to be, I don't know, it needs something. It needs to be, it needs a spice.
We're out of balance right now. We started off strong with content, funniness, and then keeping it fresh and different. But now it's just always technical.
It's very technical. Like,
boring.
Yes, I feel like every I don't know, the technical episodes are good for a lot of people. There's no question about it. But I feel like there has to be some kind of fun. There has to be fun, right?
There
has to be not only technical but entertaining as well. So we need to do something about it.
What are we gonna do?
I don't know. I have some ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
We'll come back with something good and fresh and spicy.
Yes, we definitely need to spice it up. I'm thinking, I'm thinking like a guest host. There's a lot of ideas I have, but actually I have some ideas for other cool stuff. But for now, we're just doing our boring technical episode. I think a lot of people will learn a thing or two about motors, ESCs. And anything that has to do with electric stuff, electric gear ratios and stuff like that. But before we get to that, tell me what you've been doing lately.
Lately, I have been doing not a whole lot. Working 5 days a week. And then last weekend.
Thanks. Very insightful.
Well, I mean, that's it. But over the weekend, a good friend, Paul Andreoli, came over. He and I hung out and we did a little bit of flying, a little bit of wrenching. It's always good to hang out with that dude. You and I both flew with him out at the Eustis Flying Field, flying some helis and the Tortuga and having a good time. Just wrenching and flying and playing with helis. It's been a while since we've gone out and flown for fun, so it's a nice little change of pace.
That's it. You just went flying. That's all you've done. Nothing else.
In 1 week's time? Yeah, that's about it.
That's kind of boring.
Well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's it?
I live a very simple life.
Okay.
What about you?
I've been working on a shed. So shed. Uncle Ron can give me more shit about the shed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, It's gonna be cool. It's a wrenching shed.
More details. How big is it?
So for the listeners that don't know, I was officially kicked out of the house by my wife. Like not literally, but figuratively, my helicopters were kicked out a long time ago. So I went and bought this little shed, like a metal shed. It's literally, I think it's like 8x12. It's really, really small. And it's got a couple of shelving units, and then across from that on the other side, it's got like a workbench. It's very small. Don't you agree, Kyle?
It works. It's just a little tight if you and your boys are hanging out and they're wrenching and hanging.
It is very tight. And in addition to being tight, it is very hot. Even though it's been insulated, it's super hot because it's not a sealed shed. It's got one of those roll-up doors. Yep. So it's impossible to get it totally sealed. It's got lots of little holes here and there. So, and it's sitting in the worst part of the property because it gets the whole entire afternoon sun. So it's like being inside a soda can out there. It's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
And it's small and it stinks because I think the lizards and the frogs go in there and pee. So
you've had a lot of creatures in there too.
Yeah, there might be a rat in there too. It just sucks.
Maybe a snake or four or five.
Yeah, so I got this shed that's way bigger. It's not huge, but it's bigger. It's like 12x18. So it's the size of a small bedroom or something. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've been working on getting that ready, putting electric and setting up a little bit of insulation, going to do a little bit of flooring, and yeah. So that's going to be cool because that shed is actually sealed. There's no air. It's airtight. So it's going to stay nice and clean, and it's shade. It's in the complete opposite side of the property, so it doesn't get any sun after about 11 in the morning. It's always shaded, so it should stay cool. And, of course, we're going to put a little air conditioning in there. So it's been quite the project. It's nothing fancy. It's pretty basic, but it's still the project to run the electric and do all that kind of stuff. So that keeps me busy. I go to the shop for 20 minutes, take care of what I need to take care of, go to the shed, work on the shed, come to the house, open my laptop, take care of more stuff, and then go back to the shed. Just back and forth. But yeah, so I've been working on that. Like you said, we went and flew together on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Sunday I bailed. I was buying a lot of stuff for the shed and I had my mother-in-law visiting for the night. So
Fun.
So yeah, that's about it. So Uncle Ron, not everybody has the privilege to have an entire basement to themselves with 57 helicopters turnkey ready to fly. even though I'm owner of a hobby shop or in distribution of SAB, I have a pretty modest shade with three or four helicopters ready to fly. That's about it.
And since you live in Florida, you don't even have a basement.
No basement.
Basement to be had. Yeah. So.
And no helicopters allowed in the house.
Right.
Yeah.
You get your jet, though. The jet's in the house.
Yeah, the jet's right next to us right here in Susie's exercise room / podcast room.
Right.
Yep. So, anyway, that's about all I got for what I've been up to.
Simple life. It's cool.
Now, it's important to know to let the audience know that we might not be doing episodes for the next 2 weeks, possibly three.
Correct.
And the reason for that is next week would be the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of us are going to spend it with our family. We're doing certain preparations for that. In addition to that, Thanksgiving, not that it's not important, but Thanksgiving is the least of our worries. We're gearing up for Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And Cyber Monday, which is literally the busiest 4 days of the entire year, period. So, you know, we have to do a lot of stuff, get more product, get ready for it, you know, fill dealer orders ahead of time and all this kind of stuff. So it'll get really, really busy. And then immediately after that, we're gearing up for the Torches Winter Bash.
Yes.
Which, if you guys are listening, we've been pitching this every single week. I'm going to pitch it one more time. Don't miss it. December 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Torches Field in Ocoee, Florida. Same place we used to do the blowout. It's called the Torches Winter Bash. It's run by Bobby Watts, club president, and Gator, club vice president, mm-hmm. and the rest of the Torches club. So you need to be there. I think it's going to be fun. Don't you agree?
I can't wait.
It'll be a lot of fun.
I can't wait. The blowout for me was a lot of fun, but the blowout at the same time was not the same event. This is going to be the blowout. It was more commercialized and more of like, not like an actual event, but like more of like a, I don't even know how to say it, like it's a commercialized
fun
event.
A commercialized fun fly event. Yeah.
And then the Winter Bash is going to be more laid back, more chilling, more flying out with your
buddies. That's what I meant. The Winter Bash is fun fly, not necessarily an event. Like, I would call it just a fun fly.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it too because with Orlando, I had to work. I had to work a lot, and I'm not going to work at all.
No need.
I mean, I've been helping those guys with finding sponsors and reaching out to some people to come and support the event and doing the usual PR stuff and things like that. But aside from that, I don't feel like I have to be at the field. You know, I used to be at the field as early as Tuesday before the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, roping things up and setting up stuff and waiting for the guy that came to deliver the toilets and the other guy that came to deliver the dumpster and, you know, calling the food vendors and making sure we get the permits. And like, it was a lot of work. I don't have to do any of that. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have fun.
You just go and hang out and represent BK Hobbies and SAB and Exnova and BK Servo, obviously. But
and hang out.
Have a good time.
Cool. So let's talk about this. Where do we start?
Well, this is a bit, like you mentioned, technical topic, kind of deep. We're going to try and cover it and make it as simple and easy to understand as we can. But we are going to talk about how to choose your motor, how to choose your ESC, how to choose what size batteries, and then gear ratios, what you need, what size pinion. I've been getting a lot of questions about this personally. Like, I have a Goblin 700. What motor do I want? What ESC do I want? What motor puller do I want? How do I set it up? I want high RPM, low RPM, yada, yada, yada. So.
God, where do you even start?
Let's start with the motor.
Okay, start with the motor.
So, for a 7, man, we kind of got to make it generalized. Because we could go through every heli, but that's going to turn into a four-hour episode.
Turn into a four-hour episode.
So we're going to generalize this on based on around a 700 machine, because that's what I get the most questions on. So,
well, I think that's where you have the most options, because let's face it, if you're getting a Goblin 570, for example, you only have two choices of motors. One for 6S, one for 12S.
This is true.
That's it. We can touch on that later. If you have an Aligned, you have typically one choice of motors.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole lot of selection on KV ranges. Goblin is kind of a unique helicopter in the sense that because of the two-stage gearing system and the wide availability of so many different pulleys for the motor, you can go with a motor that's as low as 400, a little over 400 kV and as high as 600 kV,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have a lot of different options for motors for a Goblin 700.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on other helicopters, not to say anything bad about them, but they, the single stage gearing, the minute you change the pinion into a one tooth smaller, one tooth larger, you're changing your gearing by a lot. Very so you don't have a lot of different options for motors, right? You might have a couple, but you don't have 10 different motors to choose from.
Right. Or 10 different pinions to choose from, like you mentioned.
For the
Goblin 700, you can choose between. Also, just to preface, this is not pinions, it's pulleys. So if we say pinions for Goblin, we actually mean motor pulley. But you get to choose between an 18-tooth motor pulley all the way up to a 25-tooth motor pulley, which, you know, it gives you a wide variety of KV and power options available. So that's kind of how it's versatile and unique in its own way. But to get into motor size, the most commonly sized motor for a 700-size machine is definitely a 45-25 size motor.
And for the people that don't know what that means, 45 is the width of the stator.
Mm-hmm.
And what'd you say, 45-30? Is that the
45,
one? 25. 45 is the width of the stator, and 25 is the height of the stator.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what it is. And then of course, aside from those two numbers, you have your KV.
Mm-hmm.
But 45-25, like you're saying, Kyle, is the most popular motor for 700 class machine, specifically for the Goblin, is very, very popular motor. Mm-hmm. And the most popular KV is between 520 and 530, mm-hmm. I would say, right?
It's very simple.
Why is that KV the most popular one in your opinion?
Because I think the 500 to 530 KV suits the most commonly used gear ratios in helicopters today. I know, for example, generally, the gear ratios on 700s is between 9.1 to 10.1. Would you agree? Mm-hmm. Or yeah. 9 to 1, not 9.1. 9 to 1 and 10 to 1.
Yeah, between ratio. Between the most common, I believe, the stock ratio is 9.7, isn't it?
It is 9.7.
I'm gonna look here in my notes, and we'll get into that here once we talk about ratios.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 520 to 530 is the most common, but doesn't necessarily mean you have to go with 520 to 530.
Right.
You can go with any other KV, and we'll get into KVs here in a second.
Right.
But so going back to the size, like you were saying, Kyle, 45-25 is the most popular motor.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like 45-25 has power for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've flown 45-25. You've flown 45-25. I think you flew that motor for years when you were flying Scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
And so did I. And it's got plenty of power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people that prefer a bigger motor with more power. I mean, what's your opinion? Does it make a big difference?
Just recently I started flying X-Nova motors. This is a very recent change for me. And one of the first things I tried was a bigger motor. Because like Bert said, I've been flying the 45-25 size motor since like 2011. So that's 7 years of the same size motor. In fact, it was 7 years of the same motor. It was the Scorpion 45-25 520 KV motor. But now with X-Nova, they sent me a 45-30 size motor. So instead of a 45-25, you get 5 more millimeters. And what I noticed with it is that I get more torque overall out of the motor. So when you really load up the head, you know, a lot of pitch, and the motor starts to bog, or the whole power system starts to bog, you're going to have more power overall because you have more torque and more grunt and more pull overall due to the fact that the motor is just simply larger. But the KV is about the same, so I didn't have to change the motor pulley or anything to compensate for the new size motor.
So do you actually tell the difference? You can tell the difference?
Yes, I can.
It's important for people to understand also that it has a lot to do with flying style.
True.
You drive the helicopter with a lot of collective and cyclic. Mm-hmm. I don't drive the helicopter much. I use a lot of, I'm a pop and lock kind of guy, like old school, you know, smack. You know, I give it a lot of collective or cyclic, and I pop it and I stop, and then I move on to the next move. Whereas you're constantly moving through the air. That does make a big difference, because I noticed that when I fly a more powerful motor, I hardly can tell the difference. I can tell the difference on a higher head speed setup, but not necessarily on a more powerful motor. Of course, now, if we're going to a really small motor, like a 600-sized motor, which I have flown, by the way, on a Goblin 700 before, mm-hmm. and I go from that to a 45, and I think that used to be, what, a 42 or a 40?
40-35?
40-35. I think I've flown a 40-35 on a 700, mm-hmm. and then going from that to a 45-25, there's a difference. Yeah. I can feel that, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But from a 45... 25 to 45-30, I really can't tell much of a difference. Now, when I drive that motor on 14S, then yes, I can tell a difference there. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about 14S. We're going to talk about 14S too.
Whole new animal.
But yeah. So think of the size. Think of 45-25 as your standard motor for 700 class machine. If you want a bigger motor, go with 45-30.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a bigger motor, go with 45-35, mm-hmm. which I think at that point you're kind of wasting your money, because
I don't think you're going to notice the extra power. All you're going to feel is the extra weight, because the motor's getting pretty substantially larger.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have the 50 size motor, the 50, like Tarak Edition, for example, Xnova. I don't know if Scorpion makes one, they might, but the 50 size motor is ridiculously big. It's heavy. It is amazing on 14S. It's mm-hmm. perhaps the best motor you can get for 14S, for 12S.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have that motor on my, Freedom Edition 700. And it feels good, man. It feels really good. But I don't think it feels more powerful than, you know, the other helicopter, which has a 45-30. So, because it's running on 12S. So sure. I don't think there's much of a difference there. So for most people, again, 45-25 is the key. Mm-hmm. If you want to go, if you want to be the guy that has the most powerful motor, mine's bigger than yours, then get the 45-30 or 45-35 or 50 series.
Yeah.
So that's good enough for size. Now let's talk about KV.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to let people know that KV is somewhat relative, in the sense that every single motor manufacturer is going to have a little bit of a tolerance different variations in KVs.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of a 530 KV motor, it might be 3%, 5% off.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be on the low side or the high side. So that motor could actually turn 510 RPM per volt, or it could turn 550 RPM per volt. Mm-hmm. Like, it could vary a little bit here and there.
Right.
They're all not exact. So that's important to know when you're calculating gear ratios, which we'll talk about gear ratios later.
Mm-hmm.
But a note that's important, in my opinion, with regards to KV, like you said before, Kyle, 520 to 530 is the most popular KV, because most helicopters work well. They come out of the box with the right gear ratio for that KV.
Mm-hmm.
But some people would prefer to have a higher or a lower KV.
Sure.
Now, you would choose a lower KV if you are going to run 14S.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why, you don't have to, but the reason why it would be better if you chose a lower KV motor is simply because now you can go with you don't have to shrink your pulley or your pinion too much. When you go with a very small pulley or a very small pinion, depending on whether it is a Goblin or any other helicopter, you're increasing your chances of stripping your gear or stripping your belt or slippage on your tail, on your motor belt.
Mm-hmm.
Because the smaller the pinion, the pulley, the less the contact, the less the surface for either the belt or the gear to engage.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, if you're going 14S, because your voltage is going up quite a ways, most people choose a lower KV motor in an attempt to try to keep the pinion or the pulley size relatively the same and not have to go with a too small of a pulley or too small of a pinion. That's really the main reason as to people would choose a lower KV motor. Don't you agree?
I agree. I don't think there's really any reason to go too extreme outside of the 520-530 window. The only time that I have ever done that was when I was flying something like a Goblin 770, where I wanted a lower KV to shoot for the lower RPM.
Yeah.
But then again, that's not a 700, so it doesn't really apply.
Yeah. But for here's a classic example. If I had a Goblin 700, I would go with a 520 to 530 KV, 525, whatever. If I was doing 14S and I wanted to keep my head speed relatively low, like by low, I don't mean too low, but I mean like keep my head speed in the 2100 RPM range, then I would go with a 450 KV motor for 50, for 60, for 70, whatever that is. If I want it 14S, but I want it high head speed, like 2400, 2450, then I would keep the same 520-530 KV motor. And that would give me probably in that range, 23 to 2400, even higher.
Right.
But a lot of people don't like to run such a high head speed, right? So if somebody wants to run 2,000, 2,100, then you have to come down in KV, down to 450, 460, 470. Otherwise, you have to reduce your pulley or your pinion too much, and that can lead to problems.
Sure.
Right?
So, sure.
Now, what about high KV? Why would you pick like a super high KV motor, like a 560 or a 600 KV motor on a 700?
Well, in my opinion, the reason for that is if perhaps your helicopter cannot possibly provide you high enough gear ratio or high enough motor pulley to get the RPM you're desiring, so you want to use a higher KV to get more RPM out of it. Because I know you personally use a 4525-600 on
your Goblin. But that's because I want very high head speed.
That's what I'm saying.
Without going with an incredibly large pulley, right?
Right. I think you're using the same pulley as me, where you're getting about 200 to 300 more RPM out of yours.
Yeah, correct. And that is really bad for everything. That is that heats everything up. I can get away with it because of my flying style. Again, I don't constantly load the helicopter. I load, unload, load, unload. You load it the whole time. Like you're pushing on it really hard. So if you were to fly that setup, you could because you have good collective management and you know what to look for. But if you just went flying that helicopter for the same amount of time you fly yours and you didn't even think about it, you would probably like thermal the ESC or like burn something or puff the packs because it's a lot. It's a lot of power, a lot of demand on all the electronics.
Yeah.
So, but consider a high KV if you want crazy head speed. But again, be careful because that can have its own negative repercussions, right?
It strains all the components. It strains the motor itself. It'll strain the ESC. It'll strain your batteries. Heat everything up. So if even if we're getting real technical, your battery connectors will get hotter. Maybe you'll desolder something.
Yeah, yeah. So, and especially if you have a cold solder joint, kiss it goodbye. Yes. It's going to come apart. But you know, that Gold helicopter that has, I think it's 2450 or 2500 head speed. It's flying. My timer's set to 2 minutes. So that's only way to bring it back and land it and not create a problem. Like regardless of how much it's pulling, the components can handle it, but they're not going to handle it beyond that. I can stretch it to 2.5, but I land at 2 minutes just to be safe, and things come down hot.
But it's an impressive 2 minutes.
It's awesome. And as you know, I mean, it's the only helicopter I own that is set up like that. It's just stupid. And it's just done for how we would say, like, shit and giggles. It's just fun, you know. That's all it is.
Because you can.
So
that's kind of motor sizes. Would you agree? We kind of covered the KV and the motor size, stator size and everything.
As far as motor brand, they're all good brands, man. I mean, just choose whatever. You can't go wrong with anything. Obviously, I'm biased towards Xnova, but you know, Scorpion is a good motor. I mean, all motors nowadays are really good. They're all solid. You can't go wrong. Just pick a motor just that you like and just go by size and KV and motor shaft is somewhat important. For example, Xnova makes all different kinds of shafts, and I know that most of the U.S. dealers, including ourselves and distributors, We only typically stock the shaft A because it works for everything. Mm-hmm. And if you own, for example, a Goblin, you have to cut the shaft with a Dremel. No big deal. There's a shaft B that is made specially for the Goblin. There's all kinds of different shafts. Mm-hmm. I believe with Scorpion, you only get one shaft. You have to cut it. If so be it. You have to cut it on the Goblin. No big deal. Just take a Dremel tool. But most motors nowadays use... Is there a different size shafts, or they're all the same?
For X-Nova, they're all 6 millimeters. I can't tell you the length because I think it varies per motor. But they're all 6 millimeters until you get to the 50 series. The 50 series is an 8 millimeter.
It's an 8 millimeter.
Yeah.
But what about for Scorpion? Were they also 6?
They're also 6.
Yeah.
I don't know if they change once you get bigger, but I know the standard is 6 millimeter shaft. Mm-hmm. 6 millimeter. And like Bert said, you got to cut it. But... the cool thing about the X-Nova shafts is if you get the shaft B, depending on the helicopter size, like 500, 700, whatever, you won't have to cut it on the Goblin.
Yeah, correct.
And the flat spot's in the right spot and everything.
Yeah, so. Unfortunately, we don't stock, like we said before, we don't stock them all, but we can order it. I don't think A-Main stocks them all. I don't think most of our dealers do either. There's a lot of motors, so if you think about all the motor sizes, KVs times 4 shafts, it's like ridiculous amount of stock you have to have for stuff that people might not even care for, you know.
But we also carry the spare shafts. So if you buy a 45, 25, 530, and you're like, well, I want the spare shaft B, well, we have it. If you're comfortable pulling the motor apart and changing the shaft, you can do that yourself.
Yep.
But
so I think that does it for motors. What do you think?
Let's move along to ESCs, electronic speed controls.
So what to choose?
How do you choose your ESC?
Okay, so let's start by talking about... Well, it's obvious. It's simple, right? Mm-hmm. Number one, you're going to run 12S or 14S. Make sure you get an ESC that can handle 14S. Mm-hmm. Some don't, believe it or not. I know some people out there still like to run Castle Creations. Mm-hmm. They don't support 14S. You have to get a 12. You're set to 12S, period. Mm-hmm. So that is very important, what kind of cell count you're going to run. Mm-hmm. The next thing that's important is choose an ESC. Decide whether or not you need an ESC that has a good built-in BEC. Mm-hmm. Power for your electronics. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't have a BEC. Castle Creations doesn't have a BEC. Some have weaker BECs than others. Choose something, make a decision based on that. If you don't mind running another LiPo, like a 2-cell LiPo for your electronics, so be it. That's fine. But that's an important thing to consider when you're buying your ESC. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of getting a little bit off topic here, talking about all these other features, but those things are important to consider. Mm-hmm. Number three, you can't go wrong with any of them. No. Some are better than others. We're not going to say which ones are better. We're not here to discriminate against brands. They all work, and they all work very, very well. Mm-hmm. Some have telemetry, like the Tribunus series from Scorpion has telemetry with, V-Control, V-Bar, Neo. If you are a V-Control enthusiast, you like the telemetry, the ability to have telemetry or be able to control your ESC or set ESC parameters through your V-Control transmitter, then that would be a consideration. Others are have more throughput. I know some have more throughput than others, meaning given the same exact setup, same motor, same battery, same gear ratio, you would get a little bit more head speed out of some ESCs versus others. I know this for a fact because I did a lot of testing back in the day. I know Contronic has perhaps the best throughput of any ESC. Comes at a very high price. Hmm. I think Hobby Wing is a very strong second, if not comparable to Contronic. Then you have Scorpion as a third, and then you have Castle as the fourth. Castle has... pretty low throughput, so you typically have to overgear your helicopter a little bit to get the head speed you want.
So let's take a step back. What do you mean by throughput? What are you feeling?
Just the way they handle. I'm not an electronic engineer, so I can't explain it in technical terms. But based on my findings and what I've noticed doing a lot of tests back in the day, if you have, for example, one helicopter set up with a Castle 160 and the other one set up with a Hobby Wing 160. They're both identical. They both have the same motor. They both have the same gear ratio. They're both set up with the same percentage on your radio for throttle. You're going to get more head speed out of the Hobby Wing than you will get out of the Castle one, period. So I don't know if it has something to do with the software built in or the way it processes the power in and out, or the amount of virtual headroom that it gives, you know, the power throughput for the motor. I don't know what it is, but I know you get more head speed out of a hobby wing, for example, than you do out of a Castle. I'm biased towards hobby wing. I think it's a superior, awesome product, right? I can't say anything bad about George's product either, because I've flown... he was kind enough to send me a ESE a while back, and I flew it for a long time, long time. I flew it for like over a year, never had an issue. Great ESE as well, and I like the telemetry on that thing. So it's just a matter, I feel like it's a matter of personal preference, right?
I agree.
I feel like Contronic, Hobbywing, and Tribunus, and even YGE to just bring in that fourth brand. I think those four brands are equally as good. Some more expensive than others. Some have a little bit more features than others. But they're all very, very good brands. And I'll put Castle a step below, simply because it doesn't have the BEC built in, simply because it doesn't handle 14S. And it's a little bit older technology in today's standards. But it's half the price of most of them. So, you know, if somebody wants to go on a budget, maybe Castle is the answer. I don't think anybody can go wrong with any of those choices, right?
Sure.
This is mainly determining whether you want 12S, 14S, and what you want to do. That's it. I don't think there's a whole lot more to discuss about ESCs. Other than that, when it comes to what's the right or wrong thing to do, right?
Well, there's two more points that I kind of want to touch on. The first one is the size. When you're flying a 700.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, I missed that. That's the most important thing, of course. Yeah.
Right. And for the 700, I'd say there's, I guess, technically three main sizes. You can use a 130, a 160, or a 200 amp ESC. Now, all the time I get people going, hey, I just bought a Goblin Thunder Sport. Can I put a 130 on it? Sure, why not? How are you flying it? Are you going to run super high RPM? Going to run 713s? How are you going to run it? I personally have run a Hobbywing 130 on a 700 before, beating it as hard as I can with zero issues. The only way I got away with it is because I ran a fan. And what I found with hobby wings is that they can take a lot of amperage. So even though it's a 130, I was peaking up 200, 250 when I was really leaning on it. But since I had a fan on it, the internal temperature of the ESC was staying real cool and it was never getting upset. So that's why, and you don't always have to, you know, get a super huge ESC if you're going to run low RPM and do sport flying and, you know, cruise, maybe even like a scale sort of style of flying. If you want to run a 130, go for it. I just always recommend putting a fan on it or finding some way to keep the ESC
and
cool.
And again, depends on the flying style. Like if one of our listeners calls in and says, hey, I just bought this helicopter and, you know, I'm into, it's a 700 class machine and I'm hovering, doing four flight. I do loops, I do rolls, I do all rotations. And from time to time, I can do a couple of TikToks. I'm like, get a 130, right? Get a 130. Now, if that same listener says, listen, I'm flying every other day and I've been progressing really fast, then I said, well, get at least a 160 because you're probably going to get to the point where you're going to be more comfortable with a 160 because you're progressing very fast. You're going to be into hard 3D sooner than later. And it's an investment because a lot of these ESCs will last you years, right?
Right.
Especially the nicer ones.
Right.
So I would say, just to be safe, why not get a 160 or higher, just to be safe. Unfortunately, Hobbywing discontinued their 160, so you have to get a 200. The Tribunus is also a 200, and Castle still makes a 160 HV.
Correct.
So that would be your choice with Castle, but Contronic makes. I don't know if they still make the 160. I remember they used to make a 160 and a 200. If they still make the 160, that would be a good option. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Why not? If you're going with the 700, why not?
Right.
Again, unless you're very content with sport flying or you're a scale pilot and things like that, then sure, get the 130. You're never going to need the more powerful ESC.
Right. And another thing to mention is if you're going to run a 160 and beat the crap out of it, maybe do speed flying or real hard 3D, and you're going, oh man, I can only pull 160 amps. That's not the case. You can peak up to like 300 amps on these things. Like they take abuse. I think the Hobbywing can peak at like 320 or something.
Yeah, for like a split second.
For a split second, right. You can't, not continuous. But from my experience on the Hobbywing 200, I've peaked upward around 300, but on average it's like 220, 230 during flights. So, I mean, I got plenty of room, but generally just kind of 160 is safe. No matter how you fly, 160 is always going to be safe.
Okay, so talk about 12S versus 14S.
12S versus 14S. I personally, from the beginning of flying big electrics, I've always done 12S just because I never saw the need for 14S. I have flown 14S on something like a Goblin 770, where it made more sense to run 14S and get a little more grunt and pull. But I don't know. I never saw the need to go up to 14S because then it, and like I never had a charger that could do 14S until recently, or 7S I should say, or changing the motor pulley and then ordering new packs and all that. So I never really saw the desire for it. The one time where it is always necessary, in my opinion, is speed flying.
For speed flying, you need 14S. You don't need it, but it's obviously recommended for serious speed flying.
Yeah.
I flew 14S for years. For years.
For 3D.
For 3D, yeah. I think I switched to 14S when the Goblin competition came out. And I don't remember what year that was, but if I could guess, probably 2014. And I flew 14S up until 2 years ago. And the only reason why I went back to 12S is simply because I know you're going to give me shit about this, but I'm not flying to the level where I was flying 3 or 4 years ago. So I don't feel the need for that. I liked it because the Goblin competition was a heavy helicopter. Mm-hmm. It really was.
Yeah.
And 14S made it heavier. Mm-hmm. But it also, at the same time, gave me higher head speed with less RPM drop when I leaned on it. Correct. There was a lot less drop on the RPM. And the batteries came down cooler. They weren't as hot. Batteries were lasting me longer.
Mm-hmm.
It was just heavy, though. But the extra weight I never felt the extra weight because the head speed was higher. I was flying that thing at 2400 instead of 2250. So it made a big difference. If you like YouTube search Berkhammer Goblin Day or something, there's that flight that you've seen with like when Nick Johnson is on the microphone. That was 14S.
Mm-hmm.
And like after that flight, that thing came down. The battery wasn't even hot. Mm-hmm. Like it really wasn't.
Right.
I think the highest temp I ever saw in a pack was 125.
Mm-hmm.
When Goblin released the Black Thunder series, which is a lighter helicopter, then I went back to 12S. And sometimes I miss 14S. What I think the big difference is, there is practically zero RPM drop. Zero. Whereas on 12S, you're always going to get a little bit of an RPM drop. I mean, you get it, Kyle.
Yeah.
It's not significant. It's not anything that's bad. But if your packs, that's the other thing. With 14S, if my packs were older and the internal resistance in the packs was higher, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. It still did not lose RPM in flight as much. With 12S, if your packs IR get high, and the fours and fives, forget it. You're just going to bog it. It's just going to load.
Yeah.
I never noticed that with 14S. So that's one advantage of 14S.
Mm-hmm.
But it does come at an extra price. You need, like Kyle said, a charger that can handle 7S. You're adding more weight to your helicopter and so forth. But I don't think you can go wrong either way. I think 12S is just so easy. You know, you just get your stick back and you can charge it anywhere. Mm-hmm. Anybody has a charger that can handle 6S. You can charge your packs even if you're out of town or traveling or visiting a friend and, you know, whatever. It's just makes more sense. It's a smaller form factor. Packs easier to in and out of the helicopter. There's more room. Mm-hmm. I think, in fact, that the new generation Goblins, you can fit 14S packs, but they're tight.
Yeah.
They're tight.
Yeah.
On the competition model, because it was taller, you could fit it easier, right?
That's correct. So the competition frames as well as the current 770 frames are taller to accept the larger batteries. But another point that I just thought of is battery availability. When it comes time to buy batteries, everyone will make a 6S or a 12S stick pack, but not everyone readily has 14S batteries. Those are a lot harder to find.
This is very true.
I can only think of two brands right now, and that's if they're in stock, because 14S packs or 7S packs don't move very often. It's not as popular of a power system as 7S, so to find them in stock could be a challenge. So that's another thing to consider. If you're going to go full 14S, just make sure you're going to be able to get batteries when you want to get batteries.
Yep, for sure.
So,
cool.
Next, gear ratio.
So this is a long topic.
Yes.
And the podcast is getting long. But let's talk about gear ratios.
Uh-huh.
So God, where do you begin?
We could talk about, to generalize it, how I look at it is I want the motor pulley to output the RPM I want at roughly 80 to 85% ESC output.
Correct. So, and that, without getting into too much of, without being too technical about this, the way I do my calculation, tell me if you do it differently, Kyle. This is the way I do it. It's worked for me every single time. I take the motor KV and I multiply it times my voltage. And so if I'm running, so that gives me the total motor RPM that I'm turning.
Okay.
So that's what I'm looking for. So, for example, if I'm running, say, a 530 kV, for argument's sakes, I multiply it times the voltage. Now, we all know that a 12S pack, fully charged, is 50.4 volts, right? 50.4 is unrealistic because that's an absolutely...
That's perfect case scenario.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and by the time you spool it up, the voltage is going to drop.
Yeah.
But nominal voltage is 45.2.
Something what's like that, yeah.
3.7 times 12, 44.4. 44.4 is nominal. What I do is I'll calculate it at 48, which is like a sweet 4 volts per cell. That's kind of a happy medium. You know, I think that's more realistic. So what I do is I multiply 48 on a 12S, or if I'm doing a 14S, I would multiply a 4 times 14. So I would do 56. But let's talk about 12S. So I'll do 48 times 530. Let's say the KV on my motor is 530. So that gives me 25,440 RPM. That is how fast my motor is spinning. In a perfect scenario, like that's assuming that each cell is pushing 4 volts. My total pack voltage is 48 volts. My motor KV is exactly 530. It's not 512 or 547. It's 530.
Right.
So I get 25,440. So what I do at that point is I divide that by the head speed that I want to have, right? So like, let's say that I want to run 2200. So I'll take the 25,440. And I divide it by 2200, okay? That gives me 11.56. So in technically, my gear ratio should be 11.56. But wait a minute. You need to account for efficiency loss. There's a loss of efficiency. That it's electrical and mechanical, right? Because of gears and the two-staging system on a Goblin, because of internal resistance, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And then you need to account for headroom as well. So what I do is I take that final number and I multiply it times 0.8, which is like I get rid of 20% of that number. And so I get to 9.25. That's what I come up with for the gear ratio that I should start with. Now, that is for like a very aggressive setup, because I'm really looking at 2200 with plenty of headroom. But that generally works for me. So 9.25 on a Goblin, you can't get 9.25, but you can get 9.3. And 9.3 on most Goblins will be like a 23 tooth pinion, right?
Which sounds about what you and I would run.
Yeah, correct. Now, that is the way that I do it, and is I'm adding a lot of headroom, and I'm being extremely aggressive with that 0.8 multiplication. So I'm removing 20% off the top. I think for most people, if you just remove 10% off the top, you'll get a good setup. So in other words, you do your 48 times your 530 kV, and then you divide it by your 2200 desired final RPM, and then you multiply times 0.9. And that gives you a 10.4. Gear ratio, which in a Goblin, a 10.2 would be a 21 tooth pulley,
which would be a little on the slower side.
A little bit on the slower side. So unfortunately, there's no exact science to this. You what sucks about this, right? And you know, because you've gone through this. When you're setting up your first, when you think outside the box, and if you're going to get a helicopter, that if you're going to get a new Goblin, you know, you're going to use the same motor you're using, same pulley, same everything, you know, that works, and that's, you've flown it, you know, your head speed, and you're okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking, you're going, you know, I want to try a 560 kV motor next and this and that, you have to start with the math. Mm-hmm. And you say that you decide based on your math that you're going to end up, based on your math, that you're thinking, well, I need to use a 23-tooth pulley. You're going to take off, you're going to find, you're going to feel it, and you're going to, we don't do it anymore because we kind of know what to look for. But most people will land it, we'll temp it, we'll see how hot things are getting, and then we'll charge your packs, and then we'll see how many milliamps they put back into the packs. They'll see what the voltage on the pack is after landing. You'll have to make adjustments.
Right.
It's inevitable.
Right.
Unless it's a proven setup that you've flown time and time again, and you're duplicating it or replicating it or mm-hmm. whatever, you have to... You're going to end up switching pinions. There's no exact science.
Yeah.
Because there's too many variables, again, between efficiency loss, electronic or electrical efficiency loss, and mechanical efficiency loss, and the variations in the KV of the motor. Maybe one pack is better than the other. Mm-hmm. You get more voltage drop. Maybe your pack's internal resistance is pretty high on a couple of cells. That pack is going to have a higher internal resistance, and then you buy a new pack. There's too many variables.
Right.
So... the point of the matter is, whatever you do with your math and you arrive at a certain pinion or pulley to use on your helicopter, whether it is T-Rex, whether it is Synergy, whether it is Goblin, whatever it is, you might have to buy another pinion or pulley later because maybe your head speed is not high enough. Maybe maybe it's too high.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're 70% on your throttle curve for your... say hobby wing governor, for example, and you're at 70% and you're already at 2300. Well, that's not going to work.
Right.
So it's trial and error. There's a certain degree of trial and error, regardless of how much math you do.
There always is. When I go to choose a motor setup and motor pulley, I do not look at it as mathematically as you do. A couple years ago, Enrico Bernabe, the designer of the Goblin, let me in on a secret that with a 520 motor, this is incredibly, incredibly generalized, so it's not consistent across the board with everything. The motor pulley dictates the RPM. So if it's a 21 tooth pulley, generally you will get 2100 RPM or near that.
That is Goblin only, though.
Goblin only. Yeah, you cannot apply that to a T-Rex or a Logo. No. This is Goblin only. Yes. So a 21 tooth pulley will get you close to 2100 RPM. So I've always kind of used that tool to kind of gauge what RPM I was going to get out of a setup, because I've gone before with different, like a 520 kV motor, and tried to gear it for, you know, larger blades to get a lower RPM, and kind of swapped around settings like that.
Well, think about this though, Kyle. If you take 48 volts and you multiply it, you said a 520 kV
mm-hmm.
for that. If you take 48 volts, which is, it's not exact, but it's close to more or less what you would get with 12S pack, you multiply it times 520 kV, your motor is at 24,960.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you divide that by 21 tooth pulley on a Goblin is 10.2 gear ratio, then it gives you 2447.
But with
2447 head speed. Now, that is at 100% throttle.
Right.
That is without any efficiency loss.
Mm-hmm.
That is just in a perfect world with no load, no efficiency loss, right. no batteries holding the perfect 4 volts, the motor is truly 520 kV,
mm-hmm.
that's 2447. If you take 10% off of that for efficiency loss, you're at 2200.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take another, I don't know, 5% for headroom or something, you're at 2100,
mm-hmm.
2050, 2100. So that's pretty accurate.
It's within the range. Yeah. It's certainly within the range. Yeah. Another thing that we've mentioned, and maybe people don't understand what we mean by that, is the headroom and why we run 80%. That's purely for the governor and the motor to work well together.
Correct.
So if you load the motor and the governor has to apply more RPM, it has room to do so. Because if you run 100% all the time, there's no room to add more RPM if you need it.
And there's an important thing that I'd like to mention with regards to the headroom and the governor and everything else. You and I, Kyle, fly hobby wing.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both use the hobby wing internal governor.
Yep.
We don't use the Neo governor. We don't use any other governor. Why don't you use the Neo governor?
The pure and simple answer is that the Hobbywing governor is plug and play. I don't tune it. I don't do anything with it. I calibrate my endpoints and I fly. There's no
tuning. And it's simple. Yeah, and it works.
Yep.
And it works beautifully.
Yep. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the Neo governor. But to get it to hold RPM the way that I wanted to, I always found myself kind of adjusting and tuning and getting my way there. But the Hobbywing, it was out of the box
perfect. Out of the box perfect.
Yeah, 100% perfect.
And what you're saying about headroom, what that means is that whatever means of governing you're using, whether it is the built-in governor in the hobby wing, the built-in governor in the tribunus, the built-in governor in the castle or in the Contronic or the Neo governor, you always want to have a little bit of, you don't want to be running 100% throughput because then there's no leeway. There's no more throttle to push. When you load the helicopter, you want to have a little bit of headroom on that throttle so that the governor can automatically advance the throttle to try to attempt to keep your RPM equal instead of, you can run it at 100%, but what's going to happen, and that's what Turek does, he runs 100%. But you're gonna have an RPM loss. There's just no other way around it. You're gonna have an RPM loss.
Right.
Now Turek's flying style is, I wouldn't say similar to mine, but it is in the sense that he comes on and off, on and off, on and off pitch all the time. He lets it breathe all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of super quick maneuvers, but he's not pushing the helicopter with a lot of collective and cyclic constantly. He lets it breathe. He does a lot of quick tail, a lot of quick cyclic stop. Like, he's not constantly loading. So he can get away with 100%. And you can hear his helicopter check down a little bit, but he's starting at 2,800, 2,900. So, of course, if it loads down to 26, you might not even notice that, right?
And he's, like you said, he's doing a lot of popping and then changing direction. He's not running the same setup that someone like myself. I run 14 to 15 degrees of collective. Turek runs like...
Nine to 10.
Like, which is a huge, huge difference. So whereas I will use full collective in a maneuver, he will hit full collective for a fraction of the second, and then he's back to center pitch to let the RPM come back and the motor get back up to where it's running at.
Absolutely.
So
conclusion with gear ratios, it's trial and error. You can use the math. It can get you close. Just do the math. It's simple. Once again, you know your motor is spinning at the KV, theoretically. Again, some of them vary, but theoretically, they spin at the right KV. So if your KV is 500, you multiply that times your voltage, and that gives you your motor RPM. Once you know your motor RPM, then all you have to do is find a gear ratio that you can use and divide your motor RPM by that gear ratio, and that'll give you your RPM, your rotor RPM. Then from there, you're going to have, again, 5 to 10% efficiency loss and another 5% perhaps, or 10% for headroom. So, but that gets you close, right?
Right.
So if your number is 2,500, just assume you're going to get 22 to 23. And if you don't, then try a bigger pulley. And if you are at a relatively low throttle setting with a lot of RPM, then you're probably overgeared, and that's bad for your stuff. Just go smaller pulley. And it's as simple as that. It's pretty simple. It requires trial and error. There's no exact answer for any of this.
Right. Just try it out and see what works for you and your flying style, because what works for me does not work for Bert.
Yeah. But the math works. The math gets you close. Yes. It doesn't get you perfect, but it gets you really close. It gives you a pretty good idea.
Right.
So another thing that's important to mention is the less amount of headroom that you have on your setup, the more efficient your setup is. So on one hand, if you have no headroom, you're going to have RPM drop, right? Your governor is not going to have enough throttle left over to override or to power through a big load on the rotor head. But on the other hand, you're going to have more efficiency overall. So some people like to set up helicopters for relatively low or lower head speed flying. I had a 770 where I was getting 9 minute flight time. Actually, I'll let Graves fly that thing back in the day. It was my red 770. I don't have it anymore, but I had it set up to where I could get 9 minutes, sometimes even 10 minutes, at 1,800 head speed. Now, the way I did that is it wasn't like my helicopter was geared for 2,000 or 2,200. It was geared for 1,800, So I had a smaller pulley. I had a lot less headroom. So that actually increased my efficiency and allowed me to get that long flight time. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do hard 3D with it, but you could do mild stuff, you know, and throw it around, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, loops, rolls, yeah. Slow TikToks.
Yeah, yeah. It was set up for endurance, not for power, right?
Right, exactly.
So that's something to consider. If you want flight time, don't overgear your helicopter. Leave very little headroom. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can, for instance, on Hobby Wing, we can go as high as 92 to 94% on our governor, built-in governor, mm-hmm. in the throttle curve, and still have enough headroom to get you by, and that's much more efficient than having 80% throttle with the same high head speed. Mm-hmm. A lot more efficient.
Right.
So.
Agreed.
Don't you agree?
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with what you said there. This has been quite the episode, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Very in-depth. A lot of knowledge being transferred here.
What else are we missing? We're missing a lot of stuff. This is the problem. We start thinking about stuff, and I forget.
I mean, there's not much to touch on with batteries besides 12S, 14S. I mean, C rating?
Yeah. I don't buy any of that.
C rating is such a load of crap.
Somebody did... I forgot who it was. Was it Nick Lynn from... Mm-hmm. RC Helena. Somebody did some true testing,
Nicklin,
with C ratings, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And they found that every advertised C rating was not even close to what it was supposed to be.
Not even close.
Not even close. I stick to 45C. I fly Pulse, and I think it's a good product, and I just stick to 45C. I never go with 65. No need. And if somebody tells you, oh, we have batteries, they're 100C, bull crap. I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah, there's no chance. No. Absolutely no chance.
The important thing, I mean, this is kind of detouring the whole theme about the episode, but what I've learned about batteries is that there are two things that kill batteries. Number one, heat. Number two, severe depletion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what the voltage is at the end of the flight. I could care less. A lot of people check the voltage on their batteries at the end of the flight, and they're looking for nominal voltage of 3.7 volts per cell or higher. That is irrelevant. That does not matter. That voltage is a result. That voltage will vary greatly depending on how hot your setup is. But it will not impact the amount of milliamps, the capacity drained out of the pack. So you can have a battery that shows 3.8 or 3.75, and it's a 5,000 milliamp, and you end up putting 4,800 milliamps back into it, you're hurting that pack in the long run. So don't care so much about the voltage. Care more about how many milliamps you put back into the pack. That is the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
The voltage doesn't mean nothing. You can have a setup that is so powerful that is creating so much internal resistance in the pack that when you land, your pack voltage is 3.6 per cell. And you think, oh, I'm hurting my pack. But when you charge it, you only put 3,000 out of 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
That is not good. It's not good that you're overheating, because you're probably overheating the pack. But that is better than the alternative, which is to have a very tame setup that when you land has 3.9, for example, and then you put 4,900 out of 5,000. That is worse.
Mm-hmm.
So look at your milliamp consumption at the end of the flight. My general rule of thumb used to be 20%. Now I think you can get away with the newer packs, you can get away with like 15%. But you always want to put at least, you don't want to put more than 85% back into the pack. Meaning if you have a 5,000 milliamp pack, you don't want to put more than like 4,200 to 4,300 milliamps back into that pack.
Right.
If you get away, you know, you can get away with one time or two where you did a 4,400, 4,500 milliamp recharge on that pack. But if you do it more than once or twice, you're going to really seriously start degrading the performance of that pack.
Mm-hmm.
If you deplete the pack completely, where you put 4,800, 4,900 out of 5,000, it's just, you're done. It's just a matter of a couple more cycles. The internal resistance, you'll notice, will start to go up. And that pack will be a good practice pack, but it won't have the power that it had when it was before you did, before you overused it.
Yeah. Another thing that I see a lot of people do is with a brand new battery, they would just over discharge it on a brand new pack. So not only is it bad to do, but bad to do right in the beginning. People fail to break in their batteries, and this is becoming less important, I think, with newer packs. But what I always do is I do at least 5 to 10 flights where I never get past like 50% discharge, just to keep the pack safe and keep it low temperature and not really work the pack too hard when it's just starting to kind of break in and discharge and everything.
See, I never did that. So everybody has their own theory about the breaking in. My main thing, and I don't know that there's an exact science or anything that,
no,
that really makes a difference, but my thing was when the pack was new at least 5 cycles, I would never charge it more than 1C.
Really?
1C, yeah. First 5 cycles, 1C. And I would, like you said, I would not fly it as hard as I could, not over discharge it. But I would still follow my 80-20 rule where I put no more than 20% back into the pack, especially in those first few cycles. And I would charge it at 1C. I think a lot of people like to charge their packs at 4 or 5C. I think that is the worst thing you can do for your packs. Worst thing you can do. You can get away with that. If you're at the field and you want to charge fast, do it. Do it once, do it twice, but don't get in the habit to charge your packs at very high C rate, at very high C ratings, because, you know, 4 or 5 C, because you're going to degrade the quality of the pack, no question. Normally when I'm at the field I do 2C. When I'm home, I do 1C. If I'm not in a hurry and I know I'm going flying tomorrow and I have 4 hours ahead of me, I'll charge them at 1C. Why not? Yeah. 1.5C. So if it's a 5,000, I'll do 7 amps, 7.5 amps. If I'm at the field, I'll do 10 amps. Sometimes I'll do 15 amps just because I want to fly. But I always go back to that 1C charge at least every 4 or 5 cycles just to get the pack to come back, you know, to full charge and everything else.
Agreed.
But I think we detoured the conversation with batteries.
Pretty far off
the topic here.
Off the topic and trail, but I think we covered a lot.
Interesting stuff.
Lots of knowledge.
It's very technical, but it's. I start talking about it, I think it's boring, but it's fascinating. It's interesting stuff.
And we could keep going. There's more.
It's, what do you got?
No, we could. Oh. We could go on longer, but I don't think we need to. Get more into governors and battery connectors and...
Well, some people asked about this, so might as well just do it. So why not?
Sure.
Yeah. So you got anything else? I think this is good enough. I think this, I'm sure there's more questions and more whatever. Send us feedback, man. That's all we need. Feedback.
Yeah.
We're considering changing our episode format, like we said in the beginning of this episode. We're considering changing our schedule. I don't know. There's a lot of things that we've thought about. We're not going to make any announcements until we get a final plan. But we remember, we're doing this for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely doing this for you guys.
Yep. So
I know Kyle wanted to go home today. And it's Tuesday night before we release this. I know he wanted to go home.
He's
like, crap, we got to do the episode. So... it's not that we don't enjoy it or we don't want to do it, but we have our lives and busy lives, and we're doing it for you. So send us feedback so we can do what guys want us to do. That's the whole point here, right?
What do you want to hear? And more importantly, who do you want to hear from? We'll try and get some guests on there. There's a lot of people who said they would and then they backed out, but we're going to keep pushing people. So
we'll always get guests. Tell us who you want for guests.
Give us someone different.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah, we don't have to get, like, you know, number one pilots in the world. We can get anybody. Just tell us who you want for guests. We've had, Justin Pucci. That was a great interview.
Yep.
That guy's doing incredible
with
MISFA. And, you know, I really admire him, man. I mean, that's awesome. Like, that's a classic example of someone who's really doing something for the hobby.
100% for the hobby.
There's no self. There's nothing self or selfish about that. He's doing it 100% for the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people like that. Just give us ideas for who you want to want us to bring in as a guest. Todd Bennett bailed on us. He doesn't want to be a guest. But, of course, most of you don't even know who Todd Bennett is. I'm sorry. Maybe you do. Sorry, wow. Todd. We love you, brother.
Wow.
Wow. Jason Krause bailed on us, too.
Yeah.
I haven't heard from him. What the hell?
Oh, well.
But send us ideas for guests and episode ideas. We've gotten a few, haven't we?
Yeah. We've gotten a lot.
Yeah.
So So
next week we might not be around. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be getting ready for Thanksgiving. The week after we're dealing with a Black Friday deal, and mm-hmm. and then maybe you'll hear from us in a couple of weeks. We'll make a post on our Facebook page, mm-hmm. which is Facebook.com/TheBKOfficial, mm-hmm. or on Instagram at TheBKOfficial. Mm-hmm. And you're available where, Kyle?
Facebook.com/KyleStaceyRC.
And Instagram?
Kyle Stacey.
And what about the Twitter?
I don't have Twitter.
Why?
I don't tweet.
Well, you guys can find me on Twitter at Bert Camber, or Instagram at Bert_Camber, or Facebook at BertRC. Thank you for listening. And if you don't hear from us before then, happy Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your turkey or whatever dinner you decide to do. Support your favorite retailer, not necessarily us. We would love for you to support us, but support your favorite retailer during Black Friday.
Yep.
A lot of the retailers are getting ready for this time of year. I know it's an incredible amount of work for everybody to get ready for this, and it's a lot of work to get all the orders out. Lots of orders coming in. Mm-hmm. Lots of specials. Stay tuned for our own BK Hobby specials for Black Friday.
It's going to be good.
And we hope to see you at the Torches Winter Bash.
You better be there.
Yep. We'll see you guys later.
See ya.